Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And with me today, as always, is...
David Leopold, the Creative Director of the Foundation.
Yes. And we have a new episode.
It's a very interesting episode, a little different than what we usually do. Today, we're going to focus on one year and one style of work, 1958, and the murals that Hirschfeld created that year.
This reminds me of like the priorities of 1942.
New faces of 1952.
Yeah, this is murals of 1958.
Yes.
That's what we'll call it. Murals of 1958.
That's exactly right. And one of them is a long-running one. It's still up. Two out of the three sets of murals that we're talking about, you can still see someplace.
We can still go and see in person.
Yes.
Wow.
And the first one I want to talk about is the one with the biggest international impact.
This one's more of a story, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just a mural. We've got a whole little...
It's got international intrigue.
It does. It has spies.
Spies, yes, it does. In 1958, the world decides to have its first World's Fair after World War II.
That's quite a few years after World War II,
actually. It is, but they had not had... There had been a regular World's Fair... leading up to World War II, but there hadn't been a World's Fair anywhere in the world in the 13 years after World War II. There had been some international expositions, but it was not a World's Fair.
But, and the World's Fair, aren't they every 10 years? Or did I make that up? Or is it every 5 years?
Yes, I think it's every five years.
I don't think it's every year you have a World's Fair.
No.
I think it's every five or every 10. I think it's every five. But even still, World War II ended 1945.
Correct.
So that's quite a few. That's, let's see, pull out my calculator. That's 13 years. David's rolling his eyes at me.
You know, she has many attributes. Math obviously is not one of them.
No.
No, there's probably a number of reasons why there wasn't a World's Fair. Mm-hmm. You weren't going to have it in the direct aftermath of World War II when a number of countries are just recovering.
Right.
I mean, Europe in the 5 years after the war, yeah, is getting its act back together.
Yeah.
Same thing with Japan. And I mean, so you have a significant portion of the planet was not ready for one. And then you have to get everybody on the same page. To have a World's Fair, you need to have all the countries participate. And it probably took some time to get everybody on board.
Healing.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, it's going to be held in Belgium.
Mm.
And the slogan for it was in Latin, which I'm not going to read. But in English, it had "For a More Humane World."
Mm.
Obviously, thinking about what happened in World War II. Although it was really the height of the Cold War, and they're all about peace at the World's Fair, they managed to put the Russian and the American pavilions right next to each other.
You could argue that was for peace. Or you could argue that's for friendly rivalry.
You keep your friends close, you keep your enemies closer. But what's so interesting, when I was doing research for the Hirschfeld Century book, I wanted to tell about, you know, Hirschfeld did a mural for the World's Fair in 1958. I wanted to learn more about it. And in doing research, I found this incredible dissertation on the making of the 1958 World's Fair. And it was a great story where the Russians have, the Russians who are working on the World's Fair and who are interacting with the Americans and all the other representatives from other countries are asked by the Kremlin, what are the Americans doing?
Mm.
And they don't know. The Americans are keeping it completely secret. There had been international expositions since the end of World War II. They weren't World's Fair. And the Russians pretty much did better than the Americans. They were always showing their technological feats and marvels that they had done. And while America could do that, it always seemed like the Russians did it bigger and better. So this time, the Americans decided to keep what they were doing under wraps. And the Russians were trying to figure out what it is that they were doing. And there's a cable that was discovered where the Russian agents are reporting back to the Kremlin that they're not sure, but they think the Americans are not actually going to go into having a lot of material objects. They are going to have something that emphasizes the freedom of thought.
Mm.
And indeed, the Americans were doing that. They really thought a lot about it. They kept it under wraps, in part because they didn't know what they were going to do. But they also realized once they had it announced right away, they were going to wait to announce what they were doing so the Russians couldn't change what they were doing to respond to it.
Well, and I think maybe the Russians don't have a lot of freedom of thought to put on display.
Precisely. That was really what the American committee, which strangely enough was led in part by a fellow by the name of Harold Coleman, who was an uncle of Louis Coleman, who was married to Louise Hirschfeld. Mm. The American World's Fair Committee starts to really think about it and realizes they're not going to be able to match them technological marvel with the Russians. So they have this idea of creating really a lounge space, a place where people could hang out and talk, exchange ideas. They put together an exhibit, really it's mostly a film, that addresses problems in America that haven't been solved yet, like racism.
Yep.
You know, to show that we're not perfect, right, but we're working on it. They were going to always have a big theater. And in fact, Edward Durell Stone, who was a well-known, famous architect, created a set of buildings for the World's Fair that still stand there today. The Americans gave the buildings to the Belgian government, and they still stand there today. And the theater that the Americans used is now a TV studio. So they had Sol Steinberg do murals out in this lounge. You know, they tried to get contemporary artists who, again, would have work that would make you think more necessarily. It wasn't propaganda.
Right.
In a way, it was sort of anti-propaganda. It was not, you need to think this. It was like, what are you thinking about? What would you like to talk about? And outside of the theater that they built, not surprisingly, they turned to Hirschfeld. Because even if you didn't know what Hirschfeld was drawing, his work sort of made you smile, right, sort of captured the joie de vivre of performance. And inside the theater, they had put together an incredible program. Gene Dalrymple, who ran so many of the programs at City Center when it was first established, and it was still a relatively young organization in New York, she had her hands in many different worlds, both the theater world, the classical music world, the dance world, because New York City Ballet comes up. It used to be called the New York City Center Ballet. They had a whole theater program. We have revivals on the stage in large part because of what City Center did. I won't go into the whole story. We did a whole program on City Center a couple years back. You should go back and take a look at that or listen to it. So she put together an incredible program of, there was a very starry production of Wonderful Town, which is such a New York story, such an American story. But there was also the San Francisco's American Conservatory Theater did a production of Waiting for Godot.
This is at the World's Fair.
This is all at the World's Fair. Jerome Robbins brought in a ballet troupe, and they had both white performers and black performers. It was a pretty incredible lineup, and they performed throughout the entire run of the World's Fair. And then Hirschfeld, he was asked to, we don't know exactly how he was asked. I'm pretty sure why he was asked, because if you're going to talk about the performing arts,
of course,
in 1958, yeah, you'd be talking about Al Hirschfeld. But strangely enough, they don't ask him at a time that he can produce a whole new mural. My guess is they asked him pretty late in the game.
Right.
And so what he does is he gives them a bunch of his drawings. I'm sure not the originals, but a bunch of reproductions of drawings, you know, whether it's Peter Pan or Jimmy Durante in Stars in Your Eyes or Orson Welles as King Lear, Ray Bolger, all these people. And they create a mural.
So you don't think you know, in our show notes, you want to click on the 1958 World's Fair mural. And you can recognize all these different drawings, but they're all existing drawings. There's no new drawings he drew for this mural.
Correct.
And you're saying you think the World's Fair actually put this mural together. You don't even think Hirschfeld kind of arranged these drawings together.
No,
because it doesn't look like
it. You look at something, they cut up drawings.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason. The drawings, they emphasize, I can't imagine. I mean, I understand why Hirschfeld gave these drawings
to them.
And in fact, many of these theater drawings would appear 3 years later in the American Theater as seen by Hirschfeld. Right. But there are other drawings, the Ray Bulger on the far left, that's from a publicity drawing for his TV show.
TV show, yeah.
I also think that if Hirschfeld was doing this, Carol Channing in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes would not be so small, but would be much larger. Yeah. So, you know, it's a composite of Hirschfeld drawings created by somebody other than Hirschfeld. I'm pretty confident of it. And it is unveiled in April 1958 when the World's Fair opens. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, the artist would be there when the mural was unveiled. This is a pretty big deal.
Yes.
Hirschfeld is not there. I don't think he cared much about international intrigue. but I think most importantly, in April, that is prime time for the theater season.
Yeah.
All the shows are opening before the Tony deadline.
I'm sure he's got a lot of drawings to do.
He had a lot of drawings to do, and they were of shows that I'm sure he was very interested in. Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne in The Visit.
Opening at their theater, correct?
Correct. Exactly. There was The Firstborn, which was a Catherine Cornell production, of which his friend Boris Aronson did the sets. So I think there was a lot of reason for him to stay. Of course, he had something in his inner ear, so he couldn't just fly there.
Right.
He would have had to take a ship there. So now you're talking that he could be gone for a month and only be in Belgium a couple of days. So you don't take a month off at the high season of what you do. And so did Hirschfeld ever see this mural? I know he saw pictures of it.
Right.
Did he ever visit it? Probably at some point, but I don't think it was something that was a big deal in his mind.
Yeah.
I think he was much more interested in the theater that was going on. Those drawings would actually be something that he would refer back to time and again throughout his career when asked to put together collections of his work. Now, 6 months later in 1958, three other of his murals, ones that he drew specifically for murals.
New murals.
Yeah.
New designs, new drawings that he arranged.
November 1958, the Playbill restaurant at the Hotel Manhattan, around the corner for what is now the Al Hirschfeld Theater.
There we go.
You know, it's a small world.
Is the Playbill, what's it called?
It's called the Hotel Manhattan.
Is it still there?
The Playbill restaurant is not there. Mm. The Hotel Manhattan is no longer the Hotel Manhattan.
Something else.
I don't know exactly what it's called now. It had many different names over the years.
It's a Pret-a-Manger.
No, it's still a hotel.
Oh, okay.
It's still a hotel. I just don't know the name of the hotel. And I'm not sure it's one of the first rank hotels that you would think, oh, let's stay there. Okay. The Waldorf Astoria, it is not.
Okay.
But in 1958, it was probably a much nicer hotel. And again, who had the idea for the Playbill restaurant? I don't know. But that was a big deal at the time. And Hirschfeld did some incredible works. He did a drawing of Broadway First Nighters that ended up being a 35-foot long mural. 5 feet high, 35 feet long.
That's what it scales to? I mean, I know how big the file is on my computer.
Yes.
But, wow.
It is a long rectangle.
With everybody.
It's two drawings, actually.
Right.
And we know that because the original drawings are in the collection of the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. And they've exhibited them. The last time they exhibited them was 10 years ago for a Hirschfeld show. But they have those drawings and they're beautiful. And Hirschfeld essentially was drawing his community. These were 90 people that he spent 50 or 60 nights of the year going to shows with these same group of people.
Right.
And you think about it, 50 or 60 nights a year is a lot of nights.
It's a lot.
You were talking about maybe once a week. And of course, nobody was opening shows in July.
Right.
So in April, they might see each other three times a week.
Yeah, and it's interesting that like that community, that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
You know, like all the same people going to the new shows all at the same time, their Broadway first night, like we don't have that anymore.
Right.
It's such an old school, like.
There are people I'm sure who still go, you know, or at all the Broadway first nights, but the community itself is much smaller.
Right.
And this was a time they were still dressing for the theater.
Right.
So everyone's coming in tuxedos. Some are coming in top hats. You know, in 1958, that's still a thing. It's a still a real thing. So Hirschfeld does this drawing of his community. And he thinks so much about it, he makes it the M papers of the American theater as seen by Hirschfeld. And it is fascinating. It shows, I mean, not surprisingly, most of the Broadway first nighters are either people like Rodgers and Hammerstein who right. are responsible for some of those first nights, but it's a lot of critics. It's yep. a lot of magazine writers who write about the theater. And in the drawing, you can see each and every one of them.
Yeah. Herb Atkinson, who else is
there? Oh, Ed Sullivan yeah. is in there.
Of course, Dorothy Kilgallen.
Dorothy Kilgallen, of course.
Richard Burton. Oh, sorry, that's Walter Kerr. No. George S. Kaufman, Truman Capote, I see. Arlene Francis, of course.
Moss and Kitty Carlisle Hart.
There you go. Harold Arlen, Cole Porter, No Coward.
But you also have set designers. You have costume designers there. You have performers. Lillian and Dorothy mm-hmm. Gish are there. Marlena Dietrich. No Coward. You know, these are all people who have either had shows on Broadway or road shows for Broadway yeah. or just... part of the starry firmament yeah. of New York social life.
Right. Al Hirschfeld and Dolly House.
Yes. In the center.
In the center, of course.
And I mean that, so to, he was drawing people that he, not only he knew, all these people would go to the Playbill restaurant. Mm. So when they walked into the bar, they could see themselves above the bar. It was practically life size. Mm. I mean, that's what you have to understand.
Yeah, if it's 5 feet tall, it's very close.
Yeah.
35 feet long. Yeah. It's pretty close.
And so it's wonderful. He really gives it, he captures a moment in New York history, in Broadway history, that if he hadn't done it, we would have, there are no other photos.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could try to photograph it, but.
No.
How are you going to fit? No.
You're right. Even for Hirschfeld, yeah. it takes him right. two very large drawings to get yeah. everybody.
35 feet. So does this mural still exist?
That is a very good question. Mm. We have been approached by people who claim they have the mural, but after a little bit of conversation, I don't think it is the actual mural, but a reproduction that was created for an exhibition at the New York Public Library in the 1960s.
Now, I have another question, actually. So, we know the New York Public Library has these two original drawings
yes.
that this was drawn on. So, the mural in the Playbill restaurant, was that, did Hirschfeld draw that onto the wall?
No.
Or is it like a wallpaper? Or
it's photographically reproduced.
Okay, photographically reproduced and then put up on the wall.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact process was mm-hmm. because we don't have it anymore.
Sure.
Now, when you went into the restaurant, sort of this was the bar, mm-hmm. and then there was sort of a waiting area, and there was a large Hirschfeld mural of Shakespeare, Eugene O'Neill, and George Bernard Shaw operating marionettes of Shaw's doing. Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews.
Right.
Shakespeare is doing the Lunts in Taming of the Shrew mm-hmm. because that was such an iconic role at that time. And Eugene O'Neill is operating marionettes of Frederick March and Florence Elridge in Long Day's Journey Into Night. Two of these shows, My Fair Lady and Long Day's Journey Into Night, had premiered only 2 years earlier. Mm-hmm. So these very iconic shows were also the recent shows. Okay. It would be like doing a mural like this now and putting Hamilton in it, except mm-hmm. Hamilton's older than these shows
right,
were.
Yeah.
And then the Lunts performing in Taming of the Shrew, as you said, they were opening in a show, in a theater named for them. Everybody would have known this performance.
Right.
This would be sort of the iconic Shakespeare performance. Now, if you look at the drawings, you're not going to see the strings of the marionettes because he didn't draw them on there. He left them blank, and the interior decorator who designed the whole restaurant, Melanie Kahan, who was in she was a Broadway first nighters and is in that drawing. Instead of having the strings, she put actual rope.
Oh, that's fine.
So I mean,
on the mural.
And this thing was huge.
Wow.
I mean, it was probably taller than 5 feet. Mm. It was very large, and it was surrounded by light bulbs.
Oh,
so
that's
it's
fun.
Almost like a backstage mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you walked into the restaurant, most of the tables were like theater boxes that you would go to the theater. So it looked like you were actually going into a box. And so they had, and each table had its own little chandelier above it.
Oh, it was so fun. A wonderful restaurant.
And I've seen a couple of photographs of it. Fortunately, Playbill provided very detailed descriptions of everything. Mm. So that's why I can tell you the exact size of some of these murals. But inside, it was like the first ladies of the American theater. And this is a stunning mural that has about 15 actresses in different roles, from Ethel Merman and Annie Get Your Gun to Catherine Cornell in the Barretts of Wimpole Street, Ruth Gordon in The Matchmaker, Judy Holliday in Born Yesterday, Helen Hayes in a show, Victoria Regina, from the 1930s, the late 1930s, which was, again, a very big hit. Lynn Fontanne as the lead in The Visit.
She really gets, she's well represented in this Playbill hotel, or Playbill restaurant.
Well, she really was.
She was a big deal. She's in every single one, I think.
Right?
Isn't she?
She is, actually. Well, she's not in the Broadway First Nighters.
Is she not? No. Oh.
She's not.
Well, then.
Two out of three ain't bad. I think she's the only one who can say that she's in two out of three. What I think is very interesting for the First Ladies of the American Theater, no Ethel Barrymore.
Interesting.
You know, she had sort of peaked.
There's not a lot of Hirschfeld drawings of Ethel Barrymore. I mean, I don't think there are a lot of the Barrymores at all.
Well, because their
stars kind of burned out by...
Well, their days on stage were coming to an end
when
Hirschfeld started in 1926.
That's what I mean. Like, already by the 20s, were...
But he's still drawing Ethel Barrymore in stage roles in the 40s with The Corn is Green.
Yeah, there are eight drawings of Ethel Barrymore.
Yeah. Okay. She shows up more than you might think.
Yeah.
There's a theater still named for her.
She's definitely one of the most important early women.
Right.
In theater, yeah.
But that she's not in this mural, it's just interesting to me. And there's other actresses in this mural that I think today most people would say, who's she?
But they're relevant in 1958. They're
exactly.
more relevant than Ethel Barrymore was.
Tallulah Bankhead is more relevant in 1958.
Yeah, than Ethel Barrymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's show business, baby.
Yeah. Look, get immortalized by Hirschfeld. It's the only way you're going to get immortality. We do have a press photo of Hirschfeld. It seems like he's painting it on the wall, but I'm pretty sure it's a stage photo because he didn't paint these on the wall.
Because I was thinking of that photo. I want to say he's painting Jimmy Durante on a theater, like from the 30s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that now that he actually is
painting.
Yeah,
what is that? What is that?
That is a theater installation.
Yeah.
Probably at the Astor Theater. Where they would often put up, you know, large reproductions of his drawings, not only on the outside of the theater, but on the inside of the theater, too. And you have to remember, in the 30s and 40s, Hirschfeld was a pretty young guy.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, he's like on top, like he's like climbing up things paint this Jimmy
Jacket
Durant.
Off.
He's got his sleeves rolled up, I think.
We have it, it's reproduced in Hirschfeld's Hollywood.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And you can get a sense of that. But yes, that's where he literally painted.
You don't know what that was for? I don't remember.
I think, off the top of my head, it might have been
early 1940s. Is it like Thousands Cheer?
It's not, but it's like that. It's a simple portrait of Durante.
But I can see the outside of all the other portraits in the Astor Theater.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right.
Oh, no. You're thinking of Thousands Cheer. There are a lot of these individual portraits.
Yeah.
This was probably, I want to think it's like two ladies from Boston.
Okay.
It's these obscure Jimmy Durante films from the early 1940s.
Something not important.
No.
But I can see the photo, and Hirschfeld did paint that. That is like an actual, what we might call a mural.
Right.
You know, where he actually did paint it onto the wall.
He painted it right on the mirror in the theater.
Yeah.
And it probably lasted 2 weeks there.
Oh.
And then it was washed off.
Yeah.
You know, scraped off. But, you know, that's the world that Hirschfeld lived in. You know, his work appeared in the most ephemeral publication that you could have, which is a daily newspaper.
That's true.
And but everybody could access it. Just like having work in the lobby of the Astor Theater was seen by more people than ever saw anything in the Playbill restaurant.
Sure.
That was a much more rarefied air. You know, the masses weren't going there. Even though they were invited, there was only going to be so many people a night. I would probably say on a popular film at the Astor Theater, they probably had as many people in one sitting at the Astor Theater than they would have in a week at the Playbill restaurant.
Sure.
This is kind of significant. I mean, for a man whose work is appearing in these ephemeral publications, you know, the long-lasting ones are magazines, so they were around for a month. You know, to have a mural on the wall that you could go to time and again, that puts you in a different place as an artist.
Sure.
That's work that's going to last. He had done another mural in New York in 1955 for the Fifth Avenue Cinema. The classic, you know, history of the movies, 1954.
Yes.
That was created to be put on as a, you know, to be put up as a mural at the Fifth Avenue Cinema.
Yes.
The original drawing was acquired by the Whitney Museum 6 years after it was created. And they still have it in their collection. Not up. Kevin Fitzpatrick was just down there. He was looking for it. And like most
movies
museums,
displayed. Come on, guys.
They don't, works on paper, and that is, even though it's on board, it's considered a work on paper. Mm. Never gets out for more than 120 days, and then it has to go back for
all
2 years.
Fine.
So
okay.
We have borrowed it for exhibitions. If we do another film-related exhibition, undoubtedly we will go for that.
Was that in the Hirschfeld Century exhibition? I know we asked for it, but I think the Whitney was moving across town at that time. Is that
what
happened?
A very good question. I don't know the answer to.
Wasn't the Whitney moving?
The Whitney was moving.
Remember? And
yeah.
It was a whole thing, like, can we get the drawing or not? I don't remember.
I kind of think we did get the drawing.
We did?
Folks, the Hirschfeld
Folks
Century
that went to the Hirschfeld... Folks, remember back 8 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, if you can't remember, neither can we, because we've done a lot of Hirschfeld exhibitions in the interim. And she's looking right now.
Does have an exhibition number from the show, so it's possible it was there.
Yeah, there's a good chance we would have borrowed it, because that's a pretty significant work.
Yeah, my husband, as an aside, my husband asked me the other day, he saw this collage, you know, this mural, Hirschfeld, this movie's image, and he asked if I did that, if I arranged all the people.
And your response
And
was,
I should
yeah,
have
I wish.
Said yes. I should have been like, yeah, does it look okay? Should I move anybody?
Well, it's true. You lie to your husband all the time.
Yeah. I should have taken credit for it. I giggled and I said, no, I didn't make the movies.
Yeah.
Of course, he didn't know what I was talking about. But
I mean, it's a great piece.
It is a great piece. You have this piece.
I do.
Hirschfeld
gave it to me, actually.
Yeah.
The year I wrote Hirschfeld's Hollywood.
Yeah, there's a print of this piece. The Whitney has the original.
Oh.
David has a print of the piece.
I would kill for the original.
Oh, this
original.
Would be a great original.
If it's missing from the Whitney... I have an alibi.
You guys know. Well,
okay, but it's a great piece. And I have it framed in my home, and I do look at it.
Yeah.
And as
it's
much
fun.
As I see it on my screen, there is nothing like seeing. It's not the original, but it's pretty darn close.
A beautiful, beautiful reproduction.
Yeah.
A limited edition print of it. Yeah, it's nice.
It's phenomenal.
It's nice.
It's and I noticed so many more things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really great piece. And that's true of all these pieces. If you saw them in person, whether you just saw the original drawings of Broadway First Nighters or any of the pieces that we've discussed, they would have an impact on you, because they're really quite wonderful. And they're really full of all kinds of details. We're not crazy about the reproduction that's in the Hirschfeld Century, but the end papers of the American Theater Book really show it off well.
This is the Broadway First Nighters.
The Broadway First Nighters.
Yeah.
Now, that same year...
back to 1958.
1958. We're not forgetting where we are.
Priorities of 1958.
Hirschfeld did a mural for the people.
Mm.
Not that anybody could see it, but that anybody could get it. James Seaman, who was a wallpaper manufacturer, contracted with Hirschfeld to do an image that they would offer as wallpaper.
Ooh.
And probably a lot of you have seen it, whether you've seen photographs from Hirschfeld's home, because he had this wallpaper on the wall next to his piano, and he was frequently photographed near this.
I always think of the one with the big pencil.
Oh, yeah.
He's got, like, a big pencil and he's next to the piano and that wallpaper's in the background.
Yeah, Yusuf Karsh. That's a really great Yusuf Karsh photo. The crazy thing with Hirschfeld, this image had Joan Crawford and the Marilyn Monroe and Benny Goodman and Tallulah Bankhead. What was that?
Clark Gable.
Clark Gable, sure. Edward G. Robinson, Toscanini. And, I mean, sometimes in Hirschfeld's home, somebody who was in the mural would be in the living room where it was.
That's
Marlene Dietrich, who's in this, was a frequent visitor to the Hirschfeld home. Hirschfeld, it's a crazy life he's living.
Yeah.
Where the people he draws are also the people in his life. And this wallpaper, it is pretty popular for its time. And what we know, that the places that buy it, I'm sure a lot of private homes put it up, but a lot of restaurants and public spaces, theaters, put it up. And over the years, I have a Hirschfeld news alert on Google, of course, and you would see these articles appear about the Hirschfeld mural in a diner in Virginia.
Right, the authentic, yeah,
Hirschfeld right,
and you would drawn, read, yeah, and we would get excited. Oh, oh, no, it's the wallpaper.
Right, but there would frequently be eyewitness accounts.
Right.
Of people who would say, oh, I remember when he came mm-hmm, down here. Mm-hmm. He did it for free sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know, and they, I mean, it's amazing the sort of mythology.
Yeah.
Because all these different restaurants have different stories about Hirschfeld came there and did it for them.
Well,
and they'll swear that they know people who saw him do it.
Well, you know the hill I die on, David.
Yes.
And it's that eyewitness testimony will not be admissible in court in 10 years. You wait and see. I've said it many times. I will say it again today.
She's been saying it for 5 years.
10 years? Yes, that's true. I probably should start to cut my time in half. But
I would think.
Eyewitness testimony, you'll need video. Just like now you need DNA.
Right.
You'll need video.
You are probably right.
Yeah.
Memory is a wonderful thing. It just doesn't happen to be
clearly,
accurate.
Yeah. You can convince yourself of anything.
One place you can see this mural, open to the public, and easy to remember where it is. If I was going to say one address in Hollywood, I think the one that everybody knows is Hollywood and Vine, the intersection of Hollywood and Vine. Well, at the intersection of Hollywood and Vine is a, if you're listening, bar owners, I'm sorry, but it's a dive bar.
Yeah.
It's called the Frolic Room.
Yes.
And they have had this up since 1958.
Wow.
And somewhere along the line, all the characters were painted different colors.
Okay, I was going to say, I remember it being in color.
Yeah. Because
I think you drove me there.
I don't think we went
in
together.
No, someone drove me there, and I jumped out and went inside.
Oh, wow.
And peeked at it.
No, next time we're in Hollywood, we'll go there and have a drink.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
We'll bring Doug, too, because he's never seen it.
We'll bring the whole crew.
Yeah.
That would be fun. But I remember it being colored.
It is colored.
Very colorful.
The color has become such a part of that of that mural at the Frolic Room that a couple of years ago, they brought in a conservator to touch up the color. And it's, I mean, they treat it like, great. You know, this is
the real color. Right. It's like, you could have just painted over it.
I mean, it was any color you wanted.
That's funny.
You know? There was another place. The restaurant was torn down, but it was such an iconic place.
Different from the Frolic Room.
Oh, the Frolic Room is still there.
Yeah, the Frolic Room you can go see. I remember. I don't know. I guess I don't know who took me there, but I have a memory of jumping out of the car very quickly just to peek in and see this mural.
If it was you and me, I would have pushed you out.
Yeah.
Oh no, we didn't go there together, but we will, and we will.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Now maybe this is another example of eyewitness testimony.
Yeah.
Maybe I've made this up. I don't know.
I'm trying to run it in my mind when it happened, and I'm not so sure it did.
Maybe it was a dream.
Yeah. I dream much more interesting things, but okay, you want to dream about work?
I dream about work a lot, unfortunately.
That's because she loves it, folks.
Yeah.
It's not because we work her so hard. Which we do, actually.
This other place, the restaurant was destroyed.
The restaurant was destroyed, but they decided to put up a historic marker.
Oh, no.
And they reached out to us because they have a portion of the image is included in the historic marker. Like, that's what people remembered about the restaurant.
The wallpaper.
Like, that's how you know it was this restaurant, because here's a section of the wallpaper.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. And one of these days, we'll make a map of all the places that have it, and we should do a tour of Hirschfeld wallpaper.
Well, I was thinking shower curtains.
We've just come up with a $1 million idea.
If we got into the shower curtain game, I would do the movies, though, I think.
Why do we only have to have one shower curtain?
We can have multiple, but I think that's what I would put up in my
bathroom. If you want Hirschfeld shower curtains, could you write us at info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org?
And if
we get enough people, we will look into it.
We will look into it. I would get a movies, I think. The movies. That would be the one I would get. Although I do like this wallpaper.
The wallpaper's a great image.
The wallpaper's
fun. But maybe you want Broadway First Nighters.
That would be a really big shower.
Okay. Maybe not all of Broadway First Nighters.
I mean, it's 5 foot by 35 foot. Yes. This is a very large
proportionally,
shower.
Proportionally.
I don't think you've been in my bathroom.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
I have a very big tub. Yeah. Well, there's lots of things you could put on. Look. Let's face it, a shower curtain with just Duke McHale. Yeah.
I know what David's going to get. He's going to get the Bloomer Girl shower curtain. That's the one.
No. I might get Babes in Arms, the Castrol.
That would be fun.
Because you'd still have two places you could sort of look out.
That's true. That's true. You could do that.
So, folks, that is the murals of 1958. Little side note.
It is funny that they all are from 1958. It must have been in vogue.
Right.
I mean, wallpaper, mural, it must be the thing to do. You know, it must be very trendy.
And Hirschfeld's sort of at the middle point of his career.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say he's at the peak of his career. For most artists, that would be it.
But celebrity's also big at this time. Mm-hmm. You know,
And the celebrity culture is really infiltrating into American society.
Yeah.
You know, more than ever before.
I think so. You know. You have Elvis, Marilyn.
Yes. I mean, and the stars at that time, you know, today stars change pretty frequently.
Yes.
But in the 1950s, Clark Gable was a star for all 10 years.
Yeah.
Still you know, Katharine Hepburn was big the whole time. Spencer Tracy, big the entire time.
Yeah.
The Lunts, still at the end of their career, are the biggest things in American theater.
Icons.
Yeah, icons is exactly right. So I just think it had a different place in American society, and there obviously was a market for it.
Yeah, I think if you did a mural now, like early 2023, I think by this time next year, it would be completely different. And you'd be like, who's this guy?
Right.
You know.
Well, again, it's a different world. When he did the movies in 1954, was when he actually did the drawing, those figures were like the only figures, you know, the biggest figures in the film industry, which was still relatively young.
Right.
You know, there had only been talking pictures for a little bit more than 25 years.
Right.
So we're talking about 1992 or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that long ago. So all those performers were still very much in people's mind, even if they were Theda Bearer.
Even if they were old, even if it's Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford. Like, even those early, early people are still very relevant in 1954.
Exactly. And so, and everybody would have known them. And, I mean, that drawing that he did for the Fifth Avenue Cinema is also reproduced in Life magazine. And when they do a book on Life Goes to the Music movies in the late 1950s, the end papers of that book is The Movies by Hirschfeld.
What else would it be?
Yeah, exactly. So there's not, I mean, we use it on our Facebook page because
it's a great collage, great
mural. Right. Right away it's Hirschfeld.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to pick specific performers. We're choosing all of them. Yes, we're choosing all of them. That's right.
Yeah.
If you don't like somebody we chose, and there's somebody else there. Yeah. So that is the murals of 1958. Thank you very much for listening. If you like the show, you can rate and review us, because Catherine's self-esteem is raised every time we get even a three-star review. Although
don't
she
give us a three-star review.
No, we don't want a three-star review. It's 5 stars.
Yeah.
That we really appreciate the 5-star review. But look, her day is, she's much nicer to work with when we've gotten a 5-star review. And if you can say something nice about her, she
even
will feel
better.
Yeah, it'll be an even better day here. So think of the people that she works with and get to it. You can also tell your friends.
Yes.
And it's a totally great way to spread the word. It makes a big difference in letting people know about the podcast and what we do here in the world of Hirschfeld.
You can follow us on Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, mm-hmm. Twitter, Instagram, at Al Hirschfeld, YouTube, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. If you just type in Al Hirschfeld, I think it might be Al Hirschfeld, but if you type in Al Hirschfeld Foundation, it will come up.
YouTube is becoming an important part of the Hirschfeld world.
Yes.
Doug Koons, who just joined our team, has just started a video series called Hirschfeld Moments. The first one just went up on the 95th anniversary of Hirschfeld's first drawing in the New York Times. He tells a very engaging story. And you, if you only know the name Harry Lauder from being that drawing, you should watch this film, because you're going to learn a little bit more about Harry Lauder and see pictures of him and see how Hirschfeld captured him. And of course, there's a funny story, as usual, that goes with it.
As usual.
But you're going to start seeing monthly short videos show up on our YouTube page and on our website and whatnot. So it's a great place to check out. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, a complaint,
a recommendation for a podcast episode.
Right. We love those.
Say, I just love when Catherine tells the stamp story. No. Can you tell us the stamp story again, Catherine?
Please.
I'll tell you the stamp story.
No. You write to info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org. Of course, you can go to our website at alhirschfeldfoundation.org. Mm-hmm. And look up anything he ever did.
And of course, our shop, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org, for all your long sleeve Jack Lemmon needs.
We have over 400 pieces of merchandise there, and as well as about 300 hand signed limited edition prints.
Yep.
And so, if you can also get a copy of our new book, The American Theater as Seen by Hirschfeld, 1962 to 2002.
That's
one of the few places in America you can actually get this book.
Also true. Also true.
You can get it on Amazon, but...
No, don't go to Amazon, because if you order it from our shop, we include a special gift.
Oh, yeah.
David forgot. Yes, we include a special gift.
I'm the one who asked them to include it.
Yes. So I'm a little alarmed he forgot about it.
I think we're always giving gifts to our fans and admirers. So I've forgotten about that one. Yes, you get a special gift if you order it directly from the foundation. It is packed with love.
It is packed with love. And the book is great. So you should get the book.
If you didn't hear our last episode, check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Because we talk about it. It's a great book. Or you can go to our YouTube channel and see Doug's great trailer
for
the book.
The video is great, but the books, you should buy
even better. Don't forget to check, if you're in New York, go to the Museum of Broadway. The show, The American Theater as Seen by Hirschfeld, is still up there. There's 25 pieces there, something from every decade of Hirschfeld's career. So please, check it out while you can. The whole museum's quite wonderful.
All right, that is it.
Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you when we do.
Bye.